You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded November 22nd, 2023. Well, this assault being waged against human decency in Palestine is a test to gauge how much atrocity we watching will countenance, what we've allowed befall others in Yugoslavia and Afghanistan, Libya, Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Ukraine, and elsewhere has metastasized, becoming finally the full-blown horror of Gaza. And it's a horror that will, if we allow it continue over there, in due course return to be visited upon us as well. So why is it allowed time and again? And who profits this belittlement of humanity? Kathy Kelly is a longtime peace and justice activist, essayist, author, and recipient of numerous awards for her peace service, including multiple nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize. Kathy's book titles include Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prison, and Other Lands Have Dreams, From Baghdad to Pekin Prison. These days, she's serving as board president at World Beyond War, where, among other things, she's been busy coordinating the November 2023 Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal. The tribunal launched Sunday, November 12th, with the first segment examining the wanton and repeated criminality of the destruction of Gaza. Kathy Kelly in the first half, and for the last 6 weeks, millions have gathered in cities and towns across the world to express their collective outrage at what is happening right now in Palestine and in an effort to pressure their respective governments to demand Israel stop its indefensible destruction of Gaza and its people. Victoria, British Columbia is no different, where every week since Israel's onslaught began, citizens have come to the legislative buildings, seat of the provincial government, to raise their voices against the statuary and granite facades in hopes of moving their representatives. Soundscapes from the Palestine Solidarity manifestations in the second half. But first, Kathy Kelly and Trying the Profiteers at 2023's Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal. Well, welcome back to the program, Kathy.
Thank you.
Well, Kathy, now I've been at this a quarter of a century, and I can't remember, during all the wars and horror transpiring since, a time I've felt less hopeful of the prospects of survival, of humanity's humaneness. The Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal launched Sunday, November 12th, with the first segment, fittingly, about the repeated aerial bombardment of Gaza. What, Kathy, did those that didn't tune in, what have they missed?
Well, I think that we are in a continuum in trying to hold accountable the merchants of death, in the sense that long before you and I were ever around to be conscious of it, the people following World War I in both Europe and the United States were enraged over what they'd been more or less hoodwinked into, the industrial slaughter of World War I. And there was a strong anti-war movement in the United States and in Europe. And somebody wrote a book called Merchants of Death. The Senate in the United States held over 100 hearings trying to bring about what we're working on right now, which is ways to hold accountable the people who made enormous profits in that war. But because they have such a complicated web of profiteering and lobbying and control over elected officials, it's very, very difficult to dislodge the overwhelming influence, what President Eisenhower had called the unwarranted influence when he told people to beware of the military-industrial complex. So with the Gaza segment, and each of these segments is available online. It's okay. I'm glad you were at a Gaza demonstration when this was aired on the November 12th time. But each segment can be watched online successively. So we focused on, after Christian Sorensen pointed out the U.S. weapons going to Israel to continue their incredible slaughter of people in Gaza. We then looked at the 2009 Operation Cast Lead in much, much more detail and showed how that couldn't have been possible without the weapons that came from Boeing, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and certainly General Dynamics. Now we also think about the drone warfare and are very conscious of General Atomics. And the next segment, which has been released, is about Syria and the aerial bombardment that the U.S. waged against Syria. And then following that, a segment on Somalia. And then we'll kind of go through each week a different country, Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen. It's a sad listing. And then on December 3rd, there will be an online sort of meetup when people can come together and ask questions and interact online, as was possible on that November 12th launch. We introduced the jurors who come from all over the world, and we also sort of presented to people how they can stay in touch with this process. And constantly we want to emphasize actions people can take, like serving a subpoena to one of these military corporations, or holding a die-in, or reading the names of victims.
Rand, that is at merchantsofdeath.org. You can go there and access what Kathy's talking about. When you mentioned, Kathy, Cast Lead in 2009, there's been one every couple of years in Gaza, and as well as all the other concomitant places around the world, that these big companies are making a killing in every manner. And this idea that one leads to the other is something that's been preying on my mind, and I allude to it in the introduction, in that every time we, whose governments and the corporations who reside within largely our countries, carry out these atrocities, it's almost, it seems to me, as though they're daring us to stop them. And when we don't, it just stair steps up to the next level of atrocity, and the next, and the next, and the next, until now what we're seeing in Gaza is the entire erasure, it seems to me, of the population of Gaza, and the idea being, it seems, to push the population into Egypt and places elsewhere, and perhaps in the West Bank as well. What about this idea that we're being tested?
Well, I mean, not only are people being tested and in terrible, terrible ways, which spiral ever more toward bitterness and death and long-term trauma, but also, you know, weapons are being tested and on display for marketing purposes, which is a pretty hideous thought. And, you know, the fact that this has been going on for so long is very much on my mind because, you know, the United States bore tremendous responsibility for enormous cruelty toward the people of Vietnam. We forced people to go and burrow under the ground and live in tunnels and use those tunnels for refuge and also to stage their capacity for military fights against the United States. And actually, the tunnels did give an edge to Vietnamese fighters fighting the United States. And so the U.S. war planners, they kind of got into their mode of figuring out, well, how do we make sure that a tunnel capacity can get blown up? And they developed the paveway bombs, sometimes nicknamed bunker busters. And then the history moves on, the terrible killing of at least 400 people in the Amaria shelter, where the United States claimed Saddam Hussein had a military installation. But it was a shelter for neighborhood people where they brought their children to sleep safely overnight in February of 1991. 400 of those children and other civilians were more or less melted when the bunker buster went through the Achilles heel of that shelter. It immediately expelled 17 people right out of the shelter, and then a second bomb came, and the force of that bomb caused the pipes to cascade boiling water down on the sleeping innocent people. Then the United States wanted to bomb the tunnel networks, which the U.S. had constructed for the Mujahideen in the Hindu Kush Mountains when they were fighting the Soviets. They believed the Taliban might be using those tunnels. And so in 2017, the U.S. used this what they nicknamed the mother of all bombs, a massive ordnance air blast, and it's the strongest weapon short of a nuclear bomb in the nuclear arsenal. They used it in this remote area in the Nangarhar province of Afghanistan, and to this day, the contamination is so terrible. People can't grow their crops, and they're covered with bumps and rashes, and they say that they're afflicted by a disease related to the use of that bomb. I think forcing people underground, creating settings wherein it's almost as predictable as can be that they'll try to get their hands on weapons, as Hamas certainly does, is wrongful. I'm against the development, storage, sale, and use of any bomb anywhere. But I do think we have to pay attention to what is underneath the Negev Desert, 53 miles away from Gaza. And that is a huge storage and development center for nuclear weapons. Israel won't admit to it, but it's been proven that they now have 80, at least 80, thermonuclear weapons.
And you put out an article so fresh. I received it just minutes before we went on air, Tunnels for Safety and Tunnels for Death. And I'm assuming that the latter refers to Israel's Shimon Peres Negev Nuclear Research Center, where they are reputed to store their nuclear weapons out there in the desert.
And how ironic that Shimon Peres received the Nobel Peace Prize, and then they name their nuclear development center after Shimon Peres. And of course, now Saudi Arabia wants the nuclear weapon, and they want to normalize relations with Israel, if that means that the United States will give a green light for the technology, and maybe Israel will supply some of that technology, I don't know. But the Saudis definitely want to acquire nuclear weaponry. So the Middle East is turning into a cauldron. It's just pushing. Talk about testing, Chris. It's pushing and pushing the envelope toward annihilation. And there's very little mention of any of this in our media. I long for the hostages to be freed, but really, people with nuclear weapons hold the whole world hostage.
It seems obvious what's happening and it's beginning to leak out onto the so-named mainstream news. And there is some pushback, it seems, from CNN and other big outlets. In Canada, the CBC is still focusing. I listened to a report just this morning on the hostages, the Israeli hostages, and not mentioning what's going on in Gaza, save that the war continues, is what they call the war, where in fact what it is basically a carpet bombing campaign carried out by a military behemoth against a practically defenseless civilian population, with some fighters in the form of Hamas buried deep underground in their tunnel networks. This is what we're being presented with right now. You, in your article, though, I wanted to mention the Tunnels for Safety and Tunnels for Death. You begin by talking, quoting Professor Mustafa Abu Sway, and he's talking about what struck him most poignantly was an image of a child's arm coming out, buried in rubble, extending out. But it wasn't the hand of a dead child, but of a living child, as it turns out, desperately trying to dig themselves out from under this rubble. I mean, unbelievable suffering. And the average age, I've read, of the people killed in Gaza right now stands at 5 years of age. This is a war against the future, as can only be assumed as by design.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that arms will ache for loved ones in Israel, whose loved ones will never return. It's true equally in Gaza. It's true equally in the West Bank. You know, I remember Helen Caldicott at the height of the Cold War said, there are no communist children. There are no capitalist children. There are just children. And could we all at least agree to that punishing the children is always wrongful, no matter who does it. You can't hold those children accountable for the actions of the adults. But I feel such enormous disappointment in the idea of only two U.S. senators having been willing to call for a ceasefire. Senator Durbin and then Senator Merkley. What a travesty that leaders of the world have not responded to the massive demonstrations happening and with great consistency all around the world. You know, the people, of ordinary average people, can see this is hideous. And of course, it's going to entrench further bitterness and make it all the more difficult ever to find a way for peoples to live together on the part of both those who've lost loved ones in Gaza and in the West Bank and in Israel. But if we don't find ways to build peaceful, negotiated, diplomatic, fair, and just settlements, if we don't find ways to give people the land that's been stolen from them and to, you know, reconstruct in ways that can enhance the possibility to live together, then there's just a certain continuation and always pushing toward doom, especially when we've got ecological collapse to deal with as well, and the possibilities of needing much more collaboration amongst people because of spreads of disease and pandemics.
And those diseases and pandemics we can expect to be breaking out in Gaza, too. The weather is changing. Supplies of fresh water and everything are almost non-existent. I don't know how people are surviving at all, but I fully expect cholera and the other diseases that go along with this kind of deprivation and exposure to be coming, to be breaking out any time, and the kind of death that brings with it. You know, what's often forgotten here, not mentioned in the crisis of the moment, and rightly so, what's happening right now in Gaza. But Gaza has been almost unlivable. The United Nations has been filing reports year in and year out now these past 5 years, saying Gaza is quickly moving towards a place of unlivability. This is before all of this happened. Already we seem to forget the kind of conditions that the Gazans have been subjected to, and Palestinians generally, where we see the West Bank is becoming more and more frightening every day with people being killed by mobs and so forth there. But we tend to forget what the Palestinian people have suffered already.
Well, you know, I was in the Al-Shifa hospital in 2009 following the Operation Cast Lead. And there was a doctor there. He was actually a plastic surgeon, but he had an administrative role. And he was shaking. He was just so aggrieved. And he said, can you imagine, for 22 days, the world watched and did nothing. And then he took a phone call, and it was from farmers whose orange groves had been destroyed by G9 bulldozers that had come across the border, Israeli bulldozers manufactured by Caterpillar. And as they came across, they sprayed. Well, it must have been something like white phosphorus, because the farmers said when they picked up the oranges they were trying to salvage, their hands got terribly itchy and there was a white coating on the fruit. And so the doctor said, you know, really, we don't know what all was used against us, but throw those oranges away and wash your hands. And, you know, then later we learned about the ravages of these dense, inert metal explosives that slice off limbs so that they can't possibly have any hope of repairing people. And then the Operation Cast Lead invasion 3 years later recurred in 2013. Well, imagine these children who in their young lives have experienced this kind of invasion from air, land, and sea. They've experienced the deprivation of their parents not being able to work and provide for them. They become dependent on what can be gotten through tunnels underground. Imagine these children wanting to somehow align themselves with some means of protection. So, of course, Hamas is going to have a future. Do the Israelis think that their young people wouldn't try to protect their land? And again, I want to say such a strong word of appreciation for those like Combatants for Peace, Israeli and Palestinian former fighters who've aligned together and said, we want to try to speak to people about some new way forward. I believe in that, but I also can recognize the trauma. The little boy that I got to know in 2009 when the ceasefire was declared, Mustafa must have been about five. And he would imitate a fighter plane and run around in circles and then dive into his father's lap as though he was a nosediving bomber plane and laugh and laugh and laugh. Well, he became a young father himself. And the second day of the Israeli onslaught against Gaza, the aerial bombing, Mustafa died as he slept because his house crashed down on him after a fighter plane hit that house. But what will his children think? His spouse, his mother, his father.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Kathy Kelly. Kathy is board president of World Beyond War and co-coordinator of the Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal, carrying on, and you go to merchantsofdeath.org to find out more about that. Kathy's most recent article, I mean, really recent, like fresh off the presses. And I put it up at Kathy at my Guerrilla Radio blog.blogspot site, but it premiered at the progressive.org. And that is Tunnels for Safety and Tunnels for Death. I mentioned that you quoted Professor Mustafa Abu Sway in that. And you also quote, speaking of this child, the photograph of this child's hand coming out of the subsurface after being buried alive. And he also reminds that in Gaza, a child there now is dying every 10 minutes because of this. It really beggars us to hold peace in our hearts and not become prisoners of this cycle of hatred and violence. Dom Helder Camara wrote, "Become an expert in the art of discovering the good in every person. No one is entirely bad. Become an expert in the art of finding the truthful core in views of every kind. The human mind abhors total error. And that is in a book called Peacemaking Day by Day. It's put out, it's a Christian tract. Kathy, you've been involved with the Catholic Church for a very long time. How does your religious belief and adherence color the work that you do?
Well, thank you, Chris. You know, Dom Helder Camara was one of the true bishops in the Catholic Church. He was a symbol of unity, uniting himself with the poorest of the poor. He wouldn't leave his country. He and Pedro Casaldáliga, in almost any circumstances, they would say, no, we have to stay with our people who are battered and enfeebled by greed and war. I think that Pope Francis spoke yesterday, perhaps, about to avoid a mountain of dead bodies. And this is the responsibility of every person who assumes any kind of faith-based leadership to call for, without any reservations, no excuses, ceasefires in the face of every war, and then do the things that make for peace. And that really does require people going into their congregations, whether it's a mosque or a synagogue or a Quaker meeting or a Catholic church, and making sure that people are pursuing the hard road of education, education, education. Can it happen? Well, can we survive if it doesn't happen? But young people are, I think, bringing a new faith into our world, a faith that they can survive the ecological collapse they face if they strive together to build a new world. And those same young people are filling the sit-ins, the teach-ins, the roadside activities, the massive demonstrations. And so follow the young people. I think we can draw great hope from them.
Yeah, I mentioned that there's been demonstrations in my town, Victoria, weekly, and it's continuing as this goes on. The numbers have been huge and then not so huge. But it's been impressive that there's a strong representation of young people, a new generation for like a graybeard like myself, to see that there's new blood coming into this and they're taking charge. One of the chants at these things is against our prime minister, and it's calling him out for aiding and abetting this destruction we're seeing Israel commit in Gaza, calling him a war criminal. But I haven't heard the corporations being called out. There's a quote on the merchantsofdeath.org page by Cornel West. saying, "We render you corporations obsessed with war profiteering accountable, answerable." This idea that these people that profit most and all of their shareholders and stakeholders should be held to account is a powerful, and it should be for them, I would think, a frightening prospect.
Well, we do look with great admiration toward Canada because World Beyond War's organizers there, Rachel Small and others, have gone to the corporate offices of major weapon makers, and they've unfurled the banners, and people have been able to shut down some of these corporations, at least temporarily, in both the United States and Canada. So we do have that responsibility to make it clear that those who are at the top echelons, who are making so much money, 7% increases on Wall Street for the stocks of these major weapon corporations since October 7th, we have to make it clear that they are practicing child sacrifice, that they are engaged in one of the most primitive, repulsive, reprehensible kinds of dirty action. And the idea that they would look so suave and debonair and clean is wrongful. They have blood on their hands, and it is gruesome to think of the kinds of weapons that they keep designing to make their killing more and more terrifying.
Well, and now this week's installment, and I watched the video this morning, why the U.S. military is in Syria. As you mentioned, it's going from one catastrophe to the next. I saw it up at Rumble, so the Merchants of Death Rumble site. And how, Kathy, in our final minute, do you recommend people get engaged with Merchants of Death, the Merchants of Death Tribunal and the organization generally?
Well, we were very gratified that 1,760 people registered for that launch, and about 525 were present online. So if people can find kindred spirits and watch these segments together and then discuss them and then think about, well, what action could we take? That is ideal. Now, I know that people are taking actions in communities, and I don't want to at all interfere with those actions. But, you know, maybe some of it can be blended together more or less as people are calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza to perhaps take their focus to the corporate people that are profiting off of the war right now. And just not stop. We're on a bit of a roll, in a sense, where the media can't ignore the massive numbers of people that are registering that they will not support Merchants of Death, that they don't want to be complicit in this. So please, for your listeners, do just what Chris has done. Go to the website, watch a segment, and then, you know, get some friends together perhaps to watch it a second time. Follow up with these segments. Give us your feedback and let it lead toward action. And I especially want to mention you can register at merchantsofdeath.org and then be part of the December 3rd meetup, when we'll have exchanges about what people can do and what we haven't included that ought to be included. And of course, that is another huge subject, uranium weapons being amongst these segments that we ought to create in the future.
Yeah, amazing. And just getting more horrible by the day, and then robots and all the rest of it. You also mentioned, just in wrapping up, in your article, and again, it's Tunnels for Safety and Tunnels for Death, the film by Alain Resnais, Night and Fog, a 1956 film. And there's a quote in there that struck me, and it says, in part, "While war goes to sleep, but with one eye always open, even when one ends, we know that if it's not addressed, it just leads to the next and the next and the next," as we've seen in this tragic century of ours, which has been marred by one war after the other from the very beginning until even today.
Well, you know, I'm so grateful to those French filmmakers and Alain Resnais, because that film deeply, deeply moved me as a youngster. And I think I did think, you know, yeah, war goes to sleep with one eye open. But now as an adult, toward the end of my life, I think war never sleeps. And that's why we have to keep both eyes open and reckon with the horrific cost of war. But I was so encouraged. Some Chinese filmmakers came to visit here in Chicago, and they're working on a film, and I mentioned that film, Night and Fog, and they immediately had it on their phones and showed me that they have all watched it. So the 9 million dead people that haunted the countryside that Alain Resnais's film crew walked amid, we have plenty more haunting in a sense. But I believe there is the possibility now still that people can cross borders.